welcome.
Shalom and welcome to a new issue of Torah Tidbits Audio, brought to you by OU Israel. I'm your host, Phil Chernofsky, and this show is for a special kind of Shabbos, Shabbat Parshat B'Shalach, known as Shabbat Shira, which happens to coincide, although no coincidence, with Tu B'Shvat. We'll talk about all of that soon. The first broadcast of this show, Emir Tzashem, is Thursday, February 1st. Thursday the 13th of Shvat, and that is when these words are being recorded. I do have a piece of a shir that I gave to the folders today. I got an interesting email from the people at Arut Sheva complaining about the quality of the recorded part that I put into the show, especially last week's when there was a lot of clicking sound. As I was recording today, I realized that the clicking was not an electronic clicking. It was coming from a dinner knife, the handle of which is used by one of our ace folders of Torah Tidbits to sharpen the crease of the fold. And she runs the handle along the crease, and it clicks off at the end, hitting the table and making that sound. So rather than eliminate that sound or doing the recording elsewhere or asking her to stop, I am purposely including it so that people will have that feeling that they were actually present when these words were recorded in front of that live audience. Let us begin the show, as we have been doing for quite some time, with Psalm 130, Tehillim Kuf Lamed, Shir Hama'alot Mima'amakim Kraticha Adonai, Adonai Shimavakoli, Tehiena Aznecha Kashuvot, Lakol Tachanunai, Im Avonot Tishmoria, Adonai Miya Amod, Ki Imacha Haslicha Lama Antivare, Ki Viti Adonai Kivata Nafshi Velidvaro Hocholti, Nafshi Ladonai, Mishomerim Laboker, Shomerim Laboker, Yachel Yisrael El Adonai, Ki Im Adonai Hachesed Vaharbe Imo Fedut, Vehu Yifte et Yisrael, Mikol Avonotav. Achenu kol beit Yisrael hanatunim batzara uvashivya haomedim bein bayam uvein bayabasha, hamakom yirachem aleihem viyotzieim mitzara lirvacha, umeyafela laora, umishibud lgeula, hashta ba'agala uvizman kariv, vinomar amen.
What I wanted to say is something that comes up every so often in a Shabbaton. It's also a stereotype of Judaism and Jews, that they seem to eat on all kind of occasions. And as much as that is true, and as much as sometimes the comments and the jokes are a little negative in their tone, there is something very important about it, and I think that this week's parsha shows it. When we're talking about the mud, the manna, that came from heaven, and God's stated purpose, that it is to test the people, this we spoke about yesterday, but there's more to it than that. A religious being can attempt to separate his religious component from his physical component. And that's why there are people, Jews as well as non-Jews, who sort of accept the idea that religion belongs in the shul, or lahavdil, the church, and it belongs on what people would call religious matters. But the more physical an issue is, the less some people tend to accept the notion that religion is there. In Judaism, you could take it to the extreme of, what do you mean? It tells me how to put on my shoes, and it tells me how to cut my fingernails? And the answer that we give is yes, because we're talking not about a religion, but a way of life. And a way of life brings in that physical component 100%. Now, let's take the issue of food. At various Shabbatonim, once in a while I'll comment on this particular stanza in the Zmira of Shabbat, Ki Eshmira Shabbat. The reason it came up this week is if you look on Torah Tidbits, instead of a pasuk, which I usually quote towards the top of the page, or the bottom when Hertz read the Karayan wasn't there, I have instead a phrase from that Zmira, that song of Shabbat, which is Kocha Bechol Shishi Yachpil Mizoni. It's a prayer to God following the statement in the song that Shabbat was special because a double portion of manna fell on Friday for Shabbat. So too may God double my sustenance, just like he did with the manna. In other words, it's sort of like a prayer for increased parnasa, livelihood. The idea, when it says in that same Zmira, Rasham Bedat HaKel, it is written in God's law, meaning in the Torah, Chok El Siganav, a rule to his, let's call it assistants, referring to the Kohanim, that in the Beit HaMikdash, every day, and it is changed on Shabbat, is the Lechem HaPanim on the Shulchan. 12 special breads were baked on Friday. On Shabbat, they replaced the previous week's Lechem HaPanim. That which was taken off the Shulchan was distributed among the Kohanim on duty in the Beit HaMikdash. Our tradition says there was a miracle in that it had not gone stale in the course of the week. And this was a special food for the Kohanim. The point in the Zmira is, in the song is, because it is a rule to the Kohanim that part of the temple service deals with bread, Al Kain Lehit Anot Ba Asur, Al Pi Nivonav Asur. Therefore, to fast on Shabbat is forbidden. More than that, which we learned from this week's Sedra, there's a mitzvah to eat more on Shabbat, at least the third meal. And traditionally people eat better on Shabbat than they do during the week. But the fact that God built into temple service not just spiritual kind of things, but something that symbolizes such a physical thing as food, was taken by our sages as food is not incidental or coincidental to a person's religious life. It is part of it. That is symbolized by the Lechem HaPanim, that is brought home to us by the fact that we have rules of kashrut, that we have separation of milk and meat, that we have the prohibition of eating blood and therefore the requirement of removing it when you prepare meat for food, that we have brachot before meals, that we have benching and other brachot after meals. And you look in Shulchan Aruch, it even goes as far as manners, table manners, are part of halacha. For example, not talking when you're eating, while you're chewing, is something all of us grew up with thinking mothers say it to their children, and when women become mothers, they say it to their children. But it happens to be in Shulchan Aruch. It's a halacha. It is forbidden to talk while you're chewing. It gives the reason. It's a health hazard, because when you talk, you force air up through the trachea, which removes the flap of muscle that's covering the trachea, preventing food from going down. That's called the epiglottis. A swallow naturally covers the trachea, so the food will pass by and go down the esophagus, the food tube. when you talk at the same time that you swallow or while you're eating, you can tend to get the food, quote, down the wrong pipe or down the wrong tube. And therefore, the Shulchan Aruch in Shmirat HaGuf V'HaNeshama, in preservation of body and soul, says you're not allowed to talk while you're eating. It goes further than that. When you have a common plate, let's say hummus, in the middle of the table, two people are sitting across the table eating hummus. When one person is talking to the other, the listener has to stop eating. So the commentaries explain, the commentaries, what do you mean commentaries? That's, you know, that's what it says, Shulchan Aruch. The commentaries explain that if you, the talker, see the hummus dwindling because the guy that's listening is eating, and you're afraid you won't get enough, you might be tempted not to stop talking, but to eat while you're talking, and you're not allowed to do that. And therefore, the listener, as a courtesy, is supposed to put down his piece of pita and lay off the hummus while the conversation is going on. There are all other kind of rules of manners about, look, pigging out, eating I'll give you an example. There's an Indian in Shulchan Aruch about the proper way to drink wine. Drinking sip by sip is a problem as far as bracha is concerned. You know, I'm getting a little too far off. Let me go back to a simpler one. At the Seder table, when we are required to have four cups of wine, the Shulchan Aruch says, try to drink down the cup of wine or the quantity that you're going to drink in two quaffs. I can't call it a sip because it's more than a sip. Two gulps, whatever. More gulps, meaning smaller amounts I don't know what you call it, a quaff. I hope that's the word, I don't know. Look it up. Is going to be a problem because there has to be a certain consumption of wine to fulfill the mitzvah, the requirement, and it has to be within a certain time period. So you might think, okay, let me down it in one shot. No, that's considered shtiagasa, gross drinking, which is not polite. It's what a glutton would do. So Shulchan Aruch takes that into account and speaks to manners at the table. That gives a certain perspective to what Judaism is. And it goes back to what I said before. It is a way of life. And the lesson started in the obvious way and then became subtle, which is the point that I tried to make in the lead tidbit. The gross way of expressing this is for God to give food from heaven. You give food from heaven, then you're talking already something spiritually connected, and yet it's sustaining the people. But it's miraculous. It's not natural. When the mud ceased after 40 years, Bnei Yisrael went into Eretz Yisrael. They started eating food from the ground and other sources. But the message is the same. Ultimately, where does it come from? People say that there's a custom when you hold bread to make a bracha, like on Shabbat or any time, you're supposed to hold it and touch it with all 10 fingers. The 10 fingers represent the 10 words of the Hamotzi Lechem Min Haaretz Bracha, which represent 10 mitzvot related to bread. I don't remember them all, but they involve the various agricultural rules that have to be followed about Trumot and Maserot and this and that. And the other thing in the challah that's taken from the dough, and a whole bunch of other things that total 10 different mitzvot that are counted out that bring bread to the table. But there's a message in there. Don't think that now you are not being a religious and spiritual person. What you're doing now is feeding your face. No. When you eat, as well as when you fast, when you eat, as well as when you daven, when you eat, as well as when you learn Torah, you are being a religious person if you're following the rules. That's the lesson of a bracha, and it's a lesson, by the way, that is taught to a Jew before he learns how to learn Torah and before he learns how to practice mitzvot, meaning a little child. A little child, I would say the very first thing that you teach him Jewish-wise is making a bracha. So that's so fundamental, and it seems that that's how it started. Now, add to this the following. We say in the Haggadah in Dayenu, Ilu natan lanu et ha-shabbat, velo kervonu lahar Sinai Dayenu, had you just taught us Shabbat and not brought us to Sinai, it would have been sufficient for us to have basis on which to acknowledge and thank you. What does that mean? Shabbat was introduced to Bnei Israel a couple of weeks before the Torah was given in the place called Rephidim. And then you go one step further and say, how was the Shabbat introduced to Bnei Israel? Did they get the 39 categories of malacha that are forbidden on Shabbat? No, that came later. Did they get the mitzvah of Kiddush? No, that was not the first introduction. The first introduction of Shabbat is, you know, the mud that has been falling for 6 days? On Friday, different rules. The rule on Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday so far, repeated and reinforced, was don't leave over for the next day. Friday is different. A double portion will fall. You take what you need for Friday, and you prepare what you need for the following day, because mud will not fall on Shabbat. Shabbat has to be prepared for. Again, in what context? Not what we would call spiritual, in a physical context. Eating, Shabbat is prepared for. And when Moshe says to the people, Vayomer Moshe, Ichluhu Hayom, eat the mud today, Ki Shabbat Hayom Lashem, for today is Shabbat to God, Hayom Lo Timtzuhu Basadeh, today you will not find it in the field. It's not fast, pray, and meditate because today is Shabbat Lashem. It's eat b'te'avon with appetite because today is Shabbat Lashem. That's a message that gets across, and it's certainly manifest with Chagim as well, with the holidays. And the joking about it, or the stereotype of food and holidays, can't be really, you know, some people might mean it sarcastically, but it's a real concept. When we have a column in Torah Tidbits called Portion of the Portion, and now I see in the newspaper they carry also weekly portion, which is based on somebody's writing of a dish from Parshat HaShavua. I can't say we invented the idea, but I'm very pleased that, you know, we're into our second yearly cycle of it already. And Raquel Berenbaum, who does the column, you might not always care for her recipes, especially the ones that say highest calorie intake of any recipe imaginable and the most trans fat, you know. But occasionally she'll throw in maybe something. I'm waiting for quinoa. I would say now that I'm on a diet, quinoa was probably the original bun, you know. That and peanut butter probably was. But natural peanut butter, of course. But anyway, that's the point. The point is that, and that's one of the messages, by the way, of Erev Yom Kippur. Erev Yom Kippur, there's a mitzvah to eat. What do you mean a mitzvah to eat? Well, you're going to go into Yom Kippur the next day, and you're going to spiritualize yourselves the most of anything in the yearly cycle. Remember that that's not the only way to relate to God and to be a spiritual person. It's done when necessary or when suggested with eating, and it's done when necessary with fasting. You're not allowed to eat on a fast day, but you're not allowed to fast on an eating day. and that includes Shabbat and Chagim, and Erev Rosh Hashanah, Erev Yom Kippur rather, and Purim, and Hanukkah, and even every Rosh Chodesh. And fasting in general is frowned upon, aside from the required fasts. You know, a lot of sources write, rather than accept the fast upon yourself, which is meant as a self-deprivation in order to become more spiritual, they say, no, fast from speech and avoid, you know, doing the wrong things. But you don't have to fast. It's still available. There are people who relate to accepting a fast upon themselves, and it you know, it's good for the soul, but so is eating l'shem mitzvah, which brings me to a practical issue, and that's the eating of the third meal on Shabbat, especially during the short Shabbat of the summertime, of the wintertime, rather. I was thinking Australia for a moment there. And people say, oh, you know, I'd love to have Shalosh Shudas, but who can have Shalosh Shudas when, you know, like that. The point is, it's a mitzvah to have those three meals, and one has to do it with a little planning so that you don't get yourself into a situation where it's 4 o'clock or 5 o'clock in the afternoon and you're still stuffed from lunch and you can't imagine Shalosh Shudas. Unfortunately, or fortunately, Halacha had to come along and say, look, if you're in a situation where it would be torture to have Shalosh Shudas, all right, don't have a regular meal, take a token cracker or something, piece of herring, whatever, and let that count as your Sudash Lishit. That's unfortunate because Sudash Lishit was not supposed to be like that. It was not supposed to be something like, if you make me eat now, I'm going to throw up. No, you have to plan it in such a way that your Shabbos lunch meal was early enough or light enough, or you actually save something. You know, it could be a practical thing. You know what? Instead of having gefilte fish before the main dish, which you always end up being stuffed in the afternoon, save your gefilte fish for Shalosh Shudas. It doesn't ruin things. I told you what I do, especially in the short time when Mincha in my shul is 12:30 in the afternoon. So we start our big meal of Shabbat, stop after the appetizer, so that means sometimes grapefruit and gefilte fish, let's say, or whatever. I bench, I go to shul, I come back, I wash for a motzi again, and that's my Sudash Lishit. It has all the benefits of Sudash Lishit, because it's after noon, which is preferable, and probably required, and it's also after mincha, which is preferable, though not required. There are people who, for practical reasons, who are going to go to shul, which is followed by a shiur and then ma'ariv, for mincha and then ma'ariv, where they don't have enough time to go home for Shalosh Shudas, and let's say the shul doesn't have a Shalosh Shudas, so they'll have a Shalosh Shudas late in the afternoon, but before mincha, which is acceptable, but on a Kabbalistic level, supposedly it's supposed to be after Yedah Mincha.
You are listening to Torah Tidbits Audio, and we are talking about the different aspects of Parshat Beshalach, Shabbat Shira. Speaking of Shira, I would like to play a song from Miami Boys Choir, Shira Chadasha. It's that part of the morning service that comes right before the Amidah, right before the Shemona Esrei. Actually, more accurately, it would be the part towards the end of the bracha, the blessing that is known as in the morning, the one post-Shema blessing, the blessing of Geula, of redemption. And whenever we are focused towards the complete redemption, we are focused backwards also to the quintessential redemption, that of Yetziat Mitzrayim, the exodus from Egypt which formed us into a nation. There is an inextricable, something like that, link between redemption and song. That comes from this week's Torah reading of Beshalach, where we read of Shirat Hayam, the song of the sea. And that is the meaning of the words that the Miami Boys Choir are about to perform. Shira Chadasha Shibchu Geulim Lishimcha Al Sfat Hayam. A new song, the recent redeemed were singing to you, God, on the beach, the shore of the sea. And it is not only a historical note, it also implies and contains a prayer that God should, just as he has taken us out of Egypt, should complete the Geula B'mheira v'yameinu, amen. Miami Boys Choir, Shira Chadasha.
Yeah.
at the Torah Tidbits folding shiur earlier this afternoon, a fellow asked me about Shabbat being a day of rest. Does it actually say that in the Torah? Of course, perfect starting point is this week's Seder of Beshalach, where not only do the people of Israel have their first introduction to Shabbat, but we do too. I really should say it's the second introduction, because in the account of creation we have the concept of Shabbat, but Shabbat in its specific role as a day of rest, maybe that comes from what you are about to hear.
Let's put it like this. I mentioned before that before Sinai we were introduced to Shabbat. Part of that introduction was a rule which appears in Parshat Beshalach, which is Al Yetzei Ish Mimekomo Bayom Hashvi'i. A man shall not go out of his place on Shabbat. That does not mean your house or your bedroom or your bed. It means your place where you live. If it's a city in which you live, it means outside your city, a certain distance. If you live on a kibbutz, it means outside your kibbutz. If you're in a house by itself in the boondock someplace, it means outside of your own home or the grounds of your home. What it meant was Shabbat is for staying at rest, as opposed to the week, which is you're on the go. Now, the original context of that command was the mud. People went out of their tents and out of the camp to the periphery of the camp to gather the mud each morning of the week. They were told no mud will fall on Shabbat. No mud will spoil when it's left over from Friday. That's what you shall eat on Shabbat. Today you will not find it in the field, but rather a person shall not go out of his place on Shabbat. Shabbat is therefore presented as the day of rest, not in the context of taking a nap, and not even yet in the context of abstaining from melacha, but of sticking around. The irony of that, by the way, in the rules of Shabbat boundary, is you can, let's say you have a home with a full 360 degrees of yard around it. You can start Friday night walking around in a circle around your house and continue walking for 25 hours of Shabbat, covering miles and miles of distance. And aside from maybe having a psychiatrist check you out, you're not in any violation of the rules of Shabbat. You can take a leisurely walk of 1 kilometer, less than a mile, outside of your dwelling and be in violation of Tchum Shabbat, Shabbat boundary. So it is not physical exertion which is being limited. It's the concept of staying at home rather than going someplace.
Is there actually a physical requirement? Like is there a distance?
Yes, there is.
Less than a mile?
The rabbinic requirement, according to Rambam, the Torah limit was much longer, much further. But let's talk the practical one. The practical one is called Tchum Shabbat, Shabbat boundary, and it is a distance of 2,000 cubits, 2,000 amot, which is known as a mil, not a mile, but an M-I-L, it's usually in English, a Persian mile, which is quantified roughly at a distance of a kilometer outside the boundaries of your habitation. Again, I say, if you live in a city, then it's not really a practical issue, because you can walk from, in Yerushalayim, from Gilo out to Ramot and back and forth, which is quite a number of kilometers and miles.
Even to Mevatere.
Right. And it's still considered within the Shabbat boundary. It's more practical when you're in a hotel or a kibbutz, out someplace, where the nearest neighboring area is not that close, and all you want to do is take a nice leisurely walk down the road, you have to be mindful of the fact that you have a Shabbat boundary. Many places actually post on the road a sign.
The same fellow then inserted the following question. That's a classic question in certain context. And that is, you mean to tell me, if you live out in the country and the nearest shul to you is more than Tchum Shabbat, you can't go there on Shabbat? Isn't it better to daven in shul than to stay home? To which the answer is, I think, quite clear. Certainly, the theory of it is clear. In practical terms, one has to be very careful to evaluate each situation. But the basic question is, it is better to pray at home than certainly to drive to shul on Shabbat, which is part of his question, and even to walk to shul if it involves a rabbinic violation, and I say that on purpose, a rabbinic violation of Shabbat boundary, Tchum Shabbat, which is, as I mentioned earlier, a mere kilometer outside your dwelling. This does not mean within a city, or within a city followed by suburbs which are continuous with it. You can walk many, many, many miles within what is called one moshav, place of dwelling, but you cannot walk outside a moshav more than Tchum Shabbat, the Shabbat boundary of 2,000 amot, 2,000 cubits, approximately 1 kilometer. Look, I said to him, I'll take it one step further. Rosh Hashanah, shofar, a Torah mitzvah and command to hear the sound of the shofar. If the only shofar available for blowing or hearing is outside Tchum Shabbat, which applies on Yom Tov as well as Shabbat, one may not go beyond the boundary in order to hear and fulfill the mitzvah of shofar. Now you have to see the power of that statement. We are talking about Tchum Shabbat of only 2,000 amot, which Rambam agrees is a rabbinic command. The reason I say it like that is because the Rambam's opinion is that the concept and the mitzvah of Tchum, the prohibition of a Shabbat boundary, is Torah law, but a very, very large boundary of 24 mil, which is about 24 kilometers, and the sages shortened the distance drastically to restrict Tchum Shabbat outside of one's limits, dwelling limits, only 1 kilometer, approximately. So it's a rabbinic violation which cannot be violated in order to fulfill a Torah command of shofar. That's how sacred Shabbat must be, and Yom Tov must be in our eyes, and basically that's what the halacha is. Now, of course, a person should try to plan ahead, and for Rosh Hashanah, either import a shofar blower, preferably a minyan and a whole congregation, or go where there is the ability to hear shofar properly. But obviously, to put the rules on the table, you need a hypothetical where one lives in such a place that shofar is not accessible to this person within his proper walking boundary. Walking. I'm not talking about driving. I'm talking about walking. He may not exceed Tchum Shabbat. There is a kosher halachic procedure, one of the different types of Eruv, called Eruv Tchum, which can extend one's boundary in one particular direction at the expense of the opposite direction. But let's not get involved in that. That's kind of complicated. The simple fact on the ground is, it is a prohibition to hear shofar if it will require you to walk greater than your permissible boundary for Shabbat. There's not an awful lot of time left to the show, and I want to finish on a Tu B'Shvat note, which is this Shabbat. Let's look at it like this, because there's a song I'd like you to listen at least a part of. We make a fuss about the Rosh Hashanah La'ilanot, the festival which is identified as the New Year for trees. It has a halachic significance, which does not necessarily put it onto our calendar as any kind of celebration. It's a practical thing. We need to know what's considered a this year fruit, what's a last year fruit, for the purpose of certain rules of tithes and other things. That per se does not make a celebration out of it. The celebration of Tu B'Shvat, especially in the modern state of Israel, and elsewhere with an eye towards the state of Israel, is a recognition of the significance of the land in Jewish life, but also acknowledgement of the tree and its significance to life, its symbolism. There is a beautiful piece of Talmud where one person wanted to express his thanks to a tree for providing him with delicious fruit and shade, and there was a little stream of water near the tree, and the man was very appreciative of the tree, and he turns to the tree and he says, "Ilan, Ilan, tree, O tree, how can I bless you? Can I bless you that your fruit should be sweet? Your fruit is sweet. You don't need my blessing for that. Should I bless you that your shade should be pleasant? You don't need me for that either. It's very pleasant. Tell you what. May it be God's will that all of the cuttings that come from your tree, from you, and are planted elsewhere to become other trees, they should be like you." It is a blessing which we translate to people. And it is no small matter that the Torah says, "Ki ha'adam eitz hasadeh," man is like the tree in the field. We relate to many aspects of the tree. It's a symbolism of many things. And it is celebrated and marked on Tu B'Shvat. With just that, listen to an A.B. Rottenberg song on an album called Eish, appropriately entitled Ilan Ilan.
שנהייתי ממך יהיו כמו
As I've explained on numerous occasions, you're listening now to the part of Torah Tidbits audio that is available only on OUradio.org. The version of Torah Tidbits audio for Israel National Radio, formerly Arut Sheva, still Arut Sheva, is exactly 46 minutes long in two halves of 23 minutes, with news, with commercials, with announcements, before and after each half. The OU Radio does not have that time restriction, and therefore sometimes I don't leave it at the 46 minutes. I get a chance to finish some thoughts. I got a chance today to play the entire Ilan Ilan song rather than the shortened version for the first broadcast. And that's the story. So I would like to take the idea of the tree and attach it to another idea. There are other times and situations which can lead one to think in the direction I'm going in now. But for sure, Shabbat Shira that coincides with Tu B'Shvat provides this, I think, healthy broadening of a certain picture. Parshat B'Shalach, Shabbat Shira, definitely is big on supernatural miracles. Not that Parshat Bo wasn't, and Vo'era had its share, but the ultimate, the quintessential miracle is the splitting of the sea. A lot of things are compared with it or spoken in terms of it. And that's B'Shalach. Tu B'Shvat is literally and figuratively down to earth. It talks about nature. But it does not take too much pondering to realize that nature is a great miracle or a great series of miracles, constant miracles. The only difference between the splitting of the sea and the growth of a tree and the fruit of a tree is that the former miracle that I mentioned was a one-shot deal, and the latter is so common that the average human being takes it for granted. It needs a little bit more than average to see the greatness of the miracle of nature. Anton Chekhov, famous Russian writer, of whose short stories I have read only one in English translation, one that is called The Bet or The Wager. I probably have mentioned it in the past on Torah Tidbits Audio. I won't tell you the whole story, but there's one observation made by one of the principal characters that the trouble with human beings is that they would be amazed if apple trees bore frogs, but they're not amazed when apple trees bear apples. Judaism tries to impress upon the person that there is something to acknowledge in the wonder of this world that God created in an apple, in a tree, in all of nature, but maybe especially a tree. If you think about it like this, the bracha for that which we eat that comes from the ground, we'll say the basic bracha, is Borei Pri Ha'adama, blessed is God, the creator of the fruit of the ground. And an apple that grows on a tree is certainly something that comes from the ground as much as a tomato is. But our sages recognized in the fact that an apple grows on a tree as something even greater, as a gift of God through nature to us. Because the tomato has to be planted each year. What you plant grows, develops, and you harvest it, and then you plant it again. The apple tree, and other trees of course, has the distinct greater characteristic, and certainly greater wonder, that you can have a tree loaded with ripe apples. You can spend an hour or so picking the apples off the tree, and next season there's another set of apples waiting for you to pick, even though you did not plant a tree in the meantime. Trees prevent soil erosion. Trees contribute to the oxygen in the atmosphere. Of course, so do other green plants. Trees provide homes for birds and insects and squirrels and shade for people and others who want shade and wood and paper and all kind of good things and pretty flowers and a beautiful smell sometimes. So we look to trees with great appreciation, which is reflected in different brachot that we say, and each of those brachot, for whatever else they are intended to accomplish, they also are meant to fight the natural human tendency to take things for granted. If every time you hold a fruit in your hand and are about to bite into it, you say with thinking, "Blessed are you, God, our God, King of the universe, who has created the fruit of the tree," then you won't take it for granted. You have to think, but you won't take it for granted. And once a year in the month of Nisan, when you acknowledge fruit trees with a very special once a year bracha, you will not take trees for granted. And if you see a magnificent forest, and you make the bracha for that, shekacha lo ba'olamo, you will not take trees for granted. If you are an average human being or below, you will take it for granted. But the growth of a tree and the fruit that it produces and many, many other things in nature are no less miraculous than the splitting of the sea. And if you think about it, it's maybe more impressive. The splitting of the sea was done to accomplish two tasks: to have Bnei Yisrael, the people of Israel, pass through unharmed and in comfort, and subsequently to drown the Egyptian pursuers. And that's it. That was its plan, and that's what it accomplished. A one-shot deal. And if Bnei Yisrael saw the miracles that they saw, and came to a Vayaminu Bashem uvamoshe avdo, a belief in God and in Moshe his servant, I would say almost how much more so, if not that, at least so too must we who learn to appreciate nature, how much we should also come to that point of Vayaminu Bashem uvamoshe avdo, to believe in God and Moshe his servant, and of course in Torat Moshe, the Torah that God gave to Moshe that Moshe transmitted to the rest of the chain of tradition. That's part of it also. And I think it comes across when you ponder the fact that this Shabbat is a combination of miracles and nature, the nature of miracles and the miracle of nature, as Rabbi Natan Lopez Cardozo likes to call his lecture on this topic. This Shabbat also has sort of another kind of link between special and mundane, both of which are special because of the wonders of nature. This is not, to me, as sharp as the splitting of the sea and the tree, but there's something there also. We read in Parshat Bishalach about the mun. One aspect of the mun is that the people of Israel were told that they would collect the mun during the days of the week, each day on its own. On Friday, a double portion would fall, and they were to leave over, prepare, and leave over for Shabbat, since on Shabbat the mun would not fall. They were told not to go out in search of mun on Shabbat, and the Torah tells us that there were people from the camp who went out to find mun, and they did not find any. The Medrash says that Datan and Aviram, the arch enemies, will say, of Moshe, went out with mun, sprinkled it around, and were expecting to come Shabbat morning and make a liar out of Moshe. See, Moshe said the mun wouldn't come on Shabbat. Take a look at all of this mun. And the Medrash says that birds came early in the morning, ate up all of the man, so that Moshe's integrity and his reputation, we'll say, was preserved, and also that of God's. In acknowledgement to this unusual episode that involved the bird, a custom developed, which is back in the complete world of nature, and that is to care for feeding birds, specifically on Erev Shabbat Shira, but really you could say during the winter period where birds are hard-pressed to find their own food. I noticed on the web that February in some place, the United States or some of the states, is National Bird Feeding Month. And I smiled because it fits very much into what I'm talking about. From the special supernatural mun to the everyday experience of nature and birds and food. That's the story. It's all rolled into one. Therefore, on Friday, before Shabbat Beshalach, before Shabbat Shira, take a bird to lunch. Take a lot of birds to lunch. Put out crumbs, put out seeds, and not only do it on this Friday, but see to it that birds are fed during the winter when it's difficult for them to find their own food. It's a nice helping hand that cooperates with nature, thereby acknowledging nature as a gift from God and not something to be taken for granted. Here is another version of the song Shira Chadasha from that same part of the davening I referred to before. It is something to keep in mind. We say it every day, and every day we should see it as a Shira Chadasha, a new song of praise to God, even though we do it day in and day out. This is sort of what I was trying to say about a bracha. How many times does a person who's conscientious about bracha say a Bori Pri Ha'etz or a Shehakol Ni'ah B'Dvaro or any of the brachot? Countless times. I mentioned to people today at a shir that brachot are probably the first mitzvah that a child in a Jewish home is taught, even before he could put sentences together. And it is something that becomes a lifelong commitment and practice, and it is extremely easy to do it mechanically, automatically, without thinking. It takes a little tiny bit of thought to bring a whole new perspective to the concept of making a bracha, to the concept of thanking God. And it is simple enough to do. We're talking about brachot of 9 or 10 words. That's it. Prayer is long. That's good too. But brachot are a compressed, condensed, miniature prayer that acknowledges God as the source of all blessing, that accepts God as ours. That means we make a commitment to Him, that acknowledges that He is the Master of the universe, the King of the universe, and acknowledges that He is the one who created everything in nature. Pretty powerful for 9 or 10 words. All you gotta do is think about it the next time you take a bite of food or a sip of a drink. Shira Chadasha.
שירה חדשה, שיבחו גאולים לשמחה הגדול לשפת הים. שירה החדשה שיבחו גאונים לשמחה הגדול עשת הים יחד, יחד כולם הודו והמליכו ואמרו השם ימלוך לעולם בעת שירה, שירה חדשה יחד, יחד כולם הודו והמליכו ואמרו השם ימלוך לעולם בעת שירה, שירה חדשה
I think we'll call it a day for Torah Tidbits Audio this week for Shabbat Shira for Tu B'Shvat. As usual, there's a lot more to say, but Amir Tzashem, we will get to say it and share it sometime in the future. For now, have a Shabbat Shalom, a happy, meaningful Tu B'Shvat, whatever that means, and Lehish Tameah.
What you doing, Charlie?
Playing tennis.
Yeah, how you do that?
You go around yelling, tennis anybody?
Only not around an octopus.
Anyway, playing tennis shows good taste. Right, Starkist?
But Charlie, Starkist don't want tunas with good taste. Starkist wants tunas that taste good.
Hey!
Sorry, Charlie. Only good-tasting tuna get to be Starkist. Like good-tasting 100% solid white tuna filet in fresh spring water.
Get good taste. Oh. Get Starkist.
That, of course, was an old Starkist tuna commercial. This is not a commercial for it. It does have the OU, so I don't feel guilty about putting it on the show, and I make no connection between the Charlie the Tuna commercial, which we just heard, and this next one with which we will conclude this week's Torah Tidbits Audio. How many of you remember this car?
They'll know you've arrived when you drive up in the 1958 Edsel, the car that's truly new from nameplate to taillight. New from the front. New from the side. New from the rear. Only Edsel has the sleek, clean line design that sets it apart from the lookalike cars. And it combines new looks with the newest V8 engines in the world, the big new Edsel 400 and the power-packed Edsel 475. It is unlikely you have ever driven a car with so much real, usable power as the Edsel. And with Edsel's exclusive Teletouch Drive, you drive more safely, more easily than you ever have before. Because both hands can stay at the wheel while the Edsel shifts electrically. There's even the added luxury of new Edsel air suspension that's just like riding on air, because you are. And remember, of all the medium-priced cars, car for car, across the board, the 1958 Edsel is the one that's new and the lowest price, too. So see your Edsel dealer.